Thank you for listening to this message from Northwest Hills Community Church in Corvallis, Oregon. You can learn more about our church at nwhills.com. Today, Pastor Josh Karstensen continues a series called What is Going On, where we read the entire Bible in a year. The book of Ecclesiastes dives into the thoughts of a man who was given everything. All his wants were fulfilled. Despite having and achieving everything his heart desires, he concludes that life is meaningless if those things are all you're living for. It's sobering and depressing. But hang on until the end, because there is one thing that brings meaning to everything we do. Then this week, read the book of Ecclesiastes. Also, check out nwhills.com/hub, that's H-U-B, for additional resources like book overviews, reading plans, and application questions. Now, here's today's message.
Today we are going to be in a very different book than one that we've ever been in before. And I just want to say up front, like if you have an appointment or a meeting where you have to sneak out of here, there's really no good reason, but if you have a reason, you got to sneak out of here before I get to the end, I would say go back and listen to the end, because it's going to be a really depressing message if you don't get to the end. Like if you have not read Ecclesiastes before, I promise you, you will leave here like crazy depressed, wondering if life is worth it, which Solomon like affectionately gets at for 99% of this book. So there you have it. If I were to start today by asking us a question of what is it that you want, or what is something that you want, most of us would be able to come up with an answer of sorts, right? We all have some sort of desires. We all have some sort of longings. We can all, I think of things that we want. You know, you think of like, oh, I would like another friend, or I'd like different friends, or I'd like, you know, a more reliable car, or, you know, maybe you just want a little bit bigger house so that when your parents come to visit, they don't have to sleep on the floor. Or maybe when your parents are getting older, or you are getting older, maybe you want a little smaller house so that you don't have to clean everything, and then you don't care if your kids sleep on the floor. Or, you know, you think about all the different things that we want. I think some of us, you know, coming out of COVID, we just want life to be just a little bit more calm. Like it seemed like everything calmed down for 8 to 10 seconds, and then it just kept going and it really hasn't stopped. And I think some of us are wondering like, okay, what is the new normal? I'd like to just to have a new baseline and be okay with that. But all that being said, I think we can all think of something that we would desire, something that we would want. Today we're going to meet someone who ran out of wants. Like they literally got everything that they ever wanted. And the conclusion of getting everything that they ever wanted was to say that life is meaningless, that it's not worth living at times, that it is all vanity, that it is all vapor, that it is chasing after the wind. You can see why that would be a pretty depressing message if we don't get to any hope towards the end. But it's actually, I think it's a beautiful message, because it's one that if you play out humanity to its end conclusion, that without God, life really is incredibly meaningless. That at some point, if God does not exist, we are literally just a blip on the timeline of infinity, and what you do doesn't matter, and there is no right and wrong, and ultimately do whatever you want, because everything's just perspective anyways. And again, if you live that way, like it leads to a pretty dark place. I've talked to many people over the years who get to that place in life where they're like, I no longer have any wants. I've done everything that I've thought I wanted to do, and all the things that I wanted to do didn't bring me the joy and satisfaction that I thought they would bring me. And so what do I keep doing? How do I move on? How do I go forward in life? Because it seems quite meaningless. Today we're going to talk about someone who, again, had everything and who said at the end it was meaningless. In order to do this, I want to zoom back a little bit and kind of talk about where we are as a series, where we've been as a church this year. Our theme for the year, we try to pick a theme for every year, and our theme for the year is what is going on, right? You see it every week. It's right here. What is going on? It's a broad question getting after the larger questions that we find ourselves asking a lot in life. What is going on? Right, you think about maybe you're in a hard time relationally with a friend or a spouse, and it can be easy to ask, man, what is going on? Just this last week, I was watching a YouTube clip of a newscaster of sorts, and he was talking about one of the shootings that took place. And as he was speaking, someone came up to him and informed him that there was yet another shooting that took place. And he was silent for a little while, and then immediately the first words out of his mouth were, "What is going on?" And when we ask ourselves the "what is going on" question, I think the what happens next is often we argue about what is going on and how do we go on? What's the problem and what's the solution? And we're really good at arguing about the problem and the solution. And what we've been trying to get at as a church is to say, man, if God exists, which I believe that he does, like, what does he say about the problem? Like, how did we get here? Like, God knows, because what we experience today turns out is really no different than life a few thousand years ago. And they were experiencing the same thing. And so does God have something to say about what's going on? And does God have something to say about what it means to go on, a conclusion to the problems that we see all the time? And we found out through our study that yes, absolutely, God knows what's going on, and he's moving and he's working through it all. And we saw this as God's established himself through kind of the history of a people, the people of Israel, right? We call them the Jews, and it's a majority story of the Old Testament is how God is working through this people to show himself to the world. As we've been working through this story, we saw the narrative of the story come to the end at the book of Nehemiah. And for the last 4 weeks, we've been in the next section of literature in the Old Testament, and that is in the wisdom literature. In the wisdom literature, we see a very different type of writing, and it's a type of writing that we love because it's very real, it's very raw. It's a type of writing that's not saying, oh, here's the history of God's people and how he worked, as much as it's saying, here's someone's experience with what it felt like to be one of God's people in a broken world. And so we started out with the book of Job. Right, 4 weeks ago, we talked about Job, and Job is going to be important today because Job is the exact opposite of what happens in Ecclesiastes. Right, you go to the book of Job, and as the wisdom literature starts, Job is a man who had everything. Right, he had an incredible amount of wealth. He had a lot of power. He had a lot of influence, and he had everything taken from him instantly. You know, he had this weird interaction between Satan and God, and God says, "Have you considered my servant Job?" And Satan says, "Oh, he only loves you because you've given him everything." And God says, "Well, let's try it." And so everything is taken from him, and we get this interaction between Job and some different friends and Job and the Lord, where Job's saying, "God, I did everything. Right? I did all the things. I was at church regularly. I led my family well. I was in community group. I was serving. I was giving. I was doing all the things, and you took everything from me. How can you be a good God?" We talked about kind of the broader question that culture likes to ask, and that is, how can God be both all-powerful and all-good, yet suffering happen to those who we would consider good? And so Job kind of makes this accusation against God, and we get this powerful interaction between God and Job, where God says in chapter 38, he says, "Dress for action like a man. I will question you, and you will make it known to me." And he goes on to say, "Where were you when I..." Right, Job, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the world? Where were you when I did this? Where were you when I built this?" And Job's going, "Oh my goodness." He goes, "I've heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now I see you with my eyes, and I regret even questioning you. I put my hand over my mouth." And his need to have all of his questions answered is silenced when he meets God and he sees, man, God, you are everything. And I can trust you. And you are good, and I don't have to have doubt, I don't have to have fear, I don't have to have insecurity anymore because I've seen you. Well, today in book 4 of the 5 books, we see someone who has the exact opposite experience. We see someone who doesn't have everything taken from them, but we see someone who has everything given to them. It's so interesting, we see with Solomon a guy who's got a pretty rough start. Right, you think about the start of where Solomon came from, and some of you guys read this as we were reading the narrative, and man, his start was gritty. Right, you can imagine what a party would have been like where people are saying, "Well, like, how did your parents meet?" And man, you think about Solomon, his dad was the king, King David. He was a married king, and he forcibly finds a woman who is not his wife, gets her pregnant, has her husband killed. As she is pregnant, the prophet Nathan comes to David, Solomon's dad, and says, "This child of yours is going to die." And David's distraught. He's in mourning. Afterwards, he comforts his now wife, Bathsheba. She gets pregnant, and this next child is the boy Solomon. Right? So if you're here and you're like, man, it sounds a little bit like my story. Sometimes our stories are messy. Right? Sometimes they're not just a nice Sunday school and they got married at 25 and they all had life happily ever after. Like, that wasn't Solomon's story. But we're going to see that as Solomon takes over as king, God gives him something that he hadn't given anyone else. See, Solomon becomes king after his dad dies, and he is the king of Israel at the height of Israel's history. In a lot of ways, we see what happens in the story through the book of the Kings, and we're going to see that there's no war going on during Solomon's reign. We're going to see that he builds the temple of God, and we see, like, literally Solomon gets to see, like, the manifold presence of God dwell in the temple, which is pretty phenomenal in a lot of ways. We see also the wisdom of Solomon. God comes to him and he says to him in a dream one day, he says, I'm going to give you anything that you want, Solomon. What do you want? I'm going to give you one thing. And Solomon recognizes, like, I'm not going to be able to lead this country, this nation like my dad did. God, I need wisdom. And so God gives him wisdom. And it's said that Solomon was the wisest man to ever live. And God says, because Solomon, you didn't ask for riches and you didn't ask for the heads of your enemies and you didn't ask for long life, but you asked for wisdom, I'm going to give you all the above. And so we see a man who gets all the above. But then as we see someone who gets all the above, we also see the propensity in man's heart to that once we get everything we think we want, there is a propensity to say, God, I no longer need you. And what we see in the book of Ecclesiastes, I believe, is the kind of spelled out worldview of what a life looks like when you chase what was not God. And we're going to see at the very end of Solomon's life, he's going to come back and give a little bit of a recap of what that life looked like. Because see, what happened to Solomon is Solomon started chasing women. He took on 700 wives. He took on 300 mistresses, and he took on their foreign gods and ultimately said, God, thanks for giving me everything. I'm going to go do whatever I want. And then he writes a book of what life was like doing whatever you want and how meaningless life is like doing whatever you want when God's not at the center. And it's not until the end of his life that I believe, like a prodigal son, we're going to hear these words from Solomon, who's going to tell us this is what life's like when you're chasing life under the sun, when you're chasing life where God is not at the center. And at the very end, the last two sentences, he's going to remind us, but there's something so much better to live for. Trust me, I've been there, I've done that. To see this, we're going to start in chapter 1. This is a 12-chapter book. The invitation, right, which has been the invitation every single week, is I preach a book or someone preaches a book and then you read it the next week. I would encourage you to do that. We've got journals to go along with it. If you don't have a journal, we've got a free one for you on the table right out there outside those doors. Grab it on your way out of here. But let's start in chapter 1. If you are able, I'm going to ask that you would stand with me and we're going to see what Solomon says about life under the sun. Get ready for depression. Next week, our youth pastor is going to speak on love and sexuality, so that will be a lot more fun and lighthearted, but let's prepare ourselves in depression. Here we go. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new? It has been already in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of latter things yet to be among those who come after. Verse 12, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem. I applied my heart to seek and search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of men to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun. And behold, All is vanity and a striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is but a striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You can take a seat. Here's Solomon, and he says, it's all pointless. He says, it's all meaningless. It's all vanity. It's all a chasing after the wind. You can get whatever you want, but in the end, there's no progress. There's no moving forward. You're going to be forgotten. And the worst part is, the more people you know, the more you're connected to, the more hardship and sadness and evil you know and experience. Right? And this is true. You think about our lives. You think about the more people that you are connected to, the more you feel the pain of other people's sorrow. Right, I think about just this last week. This last week, I visited someone in the hospital. I was part of a memorial service here on Friday. I talked to someone whose wife, who's way too young, is on hospice. Right, and that's just a normal part of life in a church where you're connected to a lot of people. And the reality is, like, we are connected in ways that we've never been connected before. You can pull out your phone and you can read story after story after story of hardship, of what he calls vexation, of what he calls great sorrow. Solomon says, it's all vanity. He's going to go on in chapter 1. What we just read is kind of his whole argument for the whole thing. And he's going to go on for the rest of the book, assuming that some of us will say, but wait a minute, I think I could do this that you didn't do. And maybe that will give me meaning. Maybe that will give me purpose. And he's going to go on and he's going to say, no. What I've done, you cannot outdo. Like, I did it bigger than you. I did it better than you. And trust me. It will not bring you satisfaction. It will not give you meaning. It will not give you purpose. I tried it all. Let me tell you my story. And so he goes on to tell his story of what life was like chasing things under the sun. So we're going to look at seven of these things. And obviously, we don't have time to go through all of it. There's 12 chapters, but we're going to look at seven things that Solomon says, this is what I chased. This is where I was looking for meaning. This is where I was looking for purpose. And we're going to see what it looks like to chase those things ultimately, if God is not at the center, what it leads to. Point number one, I'm going to give you seven of them. Sorry, I don't have them on the screen today. He's going to say, I sought pleasure and entertainment to find meaning. Chapter 2, verse 1 says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. I searched my heart how to cheer my body with wine, says verse 3. Verse 8 says, I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of men. But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, of pleasure, what use is it? Here, Solomon, you can go back and reread what his life was like in the story of the kings. And man, I promise you, he threw better parties than you threw. Right? Some of you are like, we're going to have some people over to watch the Niner game today. Go Niners, that's awesome. But your party is nothing like Solomon's, I promise you. Right? He's going to say, I threw parties, I had pleasure. If I wanted it, I got it. Right? There's a little sentence in Kings. He says, they let nothing be lacking. Let nothing be lacking. And he's saying, I sought the entertainment, I sought the pleasure, and it didn't bring me happiness. Right, it's interesting because we live in a world that sells entertainment and pleasure, right? Like constantly, like we're being told, if you just get a little bit more, right? A little bit more vacation, right? You deserve it. A little bit more fun. You know, if you just get that relationship, if you just get that experience, you can find meaning in that. And you can find ultimate happiness in that. Well, if that were true, we would be the happiest nation in the history of humanity. And let me tell you, it doesn't really feel like we're quite there yet. Right, because we have access to more pleasure and more entertainment than any history of any human has ever lived. And yet reality shows us the picture that, gee, we're really not that happy. Maybe Solomon's onto something here. He goes on to say, number two, I sought progress. chapter 2, verse 4, he says, I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forests of growing trees. Now, I know we get excited about our little drip systems for our, you know, backyard gardens that we're all into. And Solomon's going like, I literally planted forests. Like, I way outdid you. And here's the thing, like, I love these, I love progress, I love design, like, I love watching a good HGTV show, I love Dwell Magazine, I love going to a modern city and looking at architecture. I think it's super fun, I think it's cool seeing what people can do, right? A few years ago, my wife and I were able to go to Oslo, and I remember just walking around going like, this is phenomenal, right? Like, you ever go to New York City, or you go to a place like Sydney, or, you know, whatever, the big cities of the world, and you're just like, man, this is amazing. Right? But Solomon's going to say, hey, there comes to a point in your life where you can build everything, but you're still not satisfied. Right? You think about the home improvement projects at home, and they're never quite enough. Like, I don't know about you, but I like improving things. And by the time you have improved something, it's like, okay, well, what's next? What's the next thing? And then you're around long enough where the thing that you improved needs improving again because it's outdated. And that's just like this cycle of life. Right? Solomon's going to say, hey, I've been there. I tried that. He had 130,000 workers spend 7 years on the temple. On top of that, he spent 13 years building his own house. He's going like, trust me. It doesn't give you the deep joy and satisfaction that your heart longs for. It will not give you meaning. Number three, he says, I sought power and wealth. Chapter 2, verse 7, I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born under my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. He goes on in chapter 2 and he's going to say, hey, it doesn't matter how much wealth and power you are able to accumulate, because guess what? Tragedy and hardship happens to everyone. No one's immune from it. It doesn't matter if you get a bank account with more zeros than you can imagine. Guess what? Cancer still strikes, right? Your kids can still die, right? You can dedicate your whole life to, you know, some great philanthropic like cause and something horrible can happen to you. Tragedy happens to everyone. And what's worse than that, Solomon's going to say, and guess what? You're all going to die. Death's the great equalizer. And what's really depressing is no one's going to remember you. Right? Like, welcome to church. Like, you know, I wear this ring sometimes. This was my great-grandfather's wedding ring, I think. It might have been my grandpa's. My grandpa died when I was 7, so over 30 years ago. And I wear it kind of to remind myself that life is not only short, but so is our memories. Like, I know a tiny bit about my great-grandpa. I've got a stack of letters from him from World War I, kind of writing back and forth, and I've got his diploma of graduate school and medical school hanging on my wall from 1907 from his graduation ceremony. But beyond that, I literally know nothing about my family. Like, I don't know the name of my great-great-grandfather. And that's not because I haven't tried. I've looked up on Ancestry.com, and maybe I wrote it down somewhere, but I don't even remember. And here's the thing. My great-grandkids are probably going to have no idea who I am, right? And so it doesn't matter, he's going to say. You think about all the effort we put into our jobs and our careers, and some of us get really excited because maybe you have a bit of a distinguished career, and maybe you've built something. Well, guess what? Anything that you build, it's going to be forgotten. Right, I was listening to a podcast recently this last week of a leader who planted a church, and you know it went really well. And this guy's got a lot of influence. He's probably one of the like most well known Christian leaders in our day. And he was saying he had the oddest experience when he left being the senior pastor of their church that he planted. He said a couple months after he left, he came back to church, and it was during COVID, so they had to do all the registration. So he goes up to the registration. There's a young gal behind taking people's names. And she had no idea who he was. And she's like, well, what's your last name? Oh, here's my last name. It's Newhoff. And she gives him a name. He's like, well, no, that's my dad. And that's just reality. Like, we're going to be forgotten. Every single one of us. We will be a distant memory or a name on a wall, maybe, or probably we might be a picture where some great-great-grandchild is going to go like, yeah, I think maybe they lived in Corvallis. You know, I don't know. I have no idea, to be honest. Let's enjoy lunch. Like, that's life, and Solomon's going to say this, and it's painful, and it's honest. Look at this, circle this, in chapter 2, verse 17. So I hated life. I hated life, because what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and a striving after wind. He goes on, I sought living for the next generation. In chapter 2, he comes up with a hypothetical, and he says, well, maybe you can acquire all this wealth and all this wisdom, and you can pass it on to your kids. And wouldn't that be great? If your kids weren't morons, he's going to say. The problem with having 700 wives and 300 mistresses is I imagine there were some family issues going on. I'm just throwing that out there. Like, and we actually know this because we can read it. And after Solomon, the entire nation falls apart. They go into civil war. And he's going to say, why am I going to spend all of my effort acquiring all this stuff, die someday? They're going to get it, and they're going to become a mess of themselves. But here's the thing. Solomon will later say, he previously said what we read last week in the book of Proverbs, like, it's good to leave an inheritance to your children's children, but he's going to say, don't live your life for them. Right? Because what does it look like for us to live our life just for our kids? What happens when we spend 25 years saying, everything in my life is for my kid, and I'm going to chase them around with everything? What happens when your kid walks away from you? Right? You know how many 60 and 70 and 80-year-olds I've sat down with, and they've said, man, my kids walked away from me. I haven't talked to them in 10, 15, 20 years. You want to know how painful that is? Solomon's going to say, don't live for your kid alone, because that pain is real. It will not give you ultimate meaning. It will not give you ultimate satisfaction. And even if you have a great relationship with your kid, they can die in a car accident tomorrow. And everything that you've poured into can be taken away from you. So what's the point, he's going to say? He goes on, point number 5, I sought purpose in the promise of progress. He continues to get pretty dark here. In chapter 4, he's going to say, man, yes, we ought to long for progress, but what happens when you look around and all you see is evil? What happens when you look around and all you experience is pain? And he makes this statement that I think is a painful statement. He's going to say, it's better to be dead than alive. And in fact, he says, it's even better if you were never born than if you were born, lived, and then died. Listen to this in chapter 4, verse 2. And I thought the dead who were already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been and has not seen the evil deeds that are under the sun. See, some of us get really excited about causes, right? Thinking like we're just going to make the world better, that we're going to end whatever cause you want to put in there. And the reality is like we can improve certainly at certain specific things and certain time periods, but when we get better at something, it just makes us aware of what we're not good at. And so we're never going to run out of the end fill in the blank statements. And Solomon recognizes that, and it's deeply painful. And he makes the conclusion that, you know what, maybe it's better to not have ever lived than to be alive, see all the pain, experience the pain, and then die. Number 6, I sought love. All right, this one seems hopeful, especially if you're in a good relationship, right? Like marriage is pretty good or like fair to okay. And you're like, okay, like that seems to be something worth living for. Like every movie out there is like, there's love. It's real. It's worth it, right? Anyone here ever seen the movie Up? Right? The first 10 minutes of that movie, like I can cry like that in the first 10 minutes. And if there's such a like something that captures love, like that movie does it so well, and it gives you hope. It's like, well, maybe that's worth living for. Like maybe I too can have a relationship like that someday. Like, by the way, I think I do have that. But anyways, here's what Solomon's going to say. He's going to say, there's something that's actually worse than death, and that's love. Listen to this in chapter 7, verse 26. I find something more bitter than death The woman whose heart is snares and nets and whose hands are fetters. Because what happens when the person that you love the most walks away from you? Right? What happens when the people that you love the most hurt you? Right? That pain is the deepest possible pain that you will ever feel. Right, some of you who have been through divorce, you know that pain. That is an incredibly deep, real pain that people who should protect you, who should be for you, take everything from you and walk away. That is a very real pain. And Solomon's going to say, man, that pain is worse than dying. And if that's you and you've been there before, it can be easy to say, man, I don't know if life's worth living. What is the point? It seems meaningless. Lastly, then I promise I'll get to some good news. I promise. He says, I sought understanding. This is good for a college town. Chapter 8, verse 16. When I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, how neither day nor night do one's eyes see sleep, then I saw all the work of God that man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. However much man may toil in seeking, he will not find it out. Even though a wise man claims to know, he cannot find it out. The more you know, he's going to say, the more you know you don't know. Right? And this is true in school. I remember being an undergrad in graduate school. I remember going in, and you really don't know a whole lot as an 18-year-old. And you walk out as a 22, 23, 24-year-old, and you just realize how much more you don't know. Right? And here's the thing. Solomon's going to say, no matter how smart you are, like there's a whole infinite amount of things that you do not know. And in my experience, some of the smartest people that I know are also some of the dumbest people that I know. Right? Like you think about people who get really good at specific things. And I picked on some people first hour. It felt a little bit harsh, so I won't call anyone out. But I'll just say this. You got to learn from hour to hour. I'll say this. I have helped people with PhDs like hang pictures on walls to show them how to use a hammer and a nail. True story. Because sometimes we get really good at certain things, but then we're really not good at a lot of things. And Solomon's going to say, man, even though a wise man claims to know, he cannot find it out. Chapter 12, verse 8, vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity. All right, so what do we do with this? Right? Do we just say life under the sun is just like, it's incredibly meaningless because everything that you thought you ever wanted, once you actually get it, maybe it doesn't satisfy you? Right? Do we talk about the fact that, man, all of us have this deep, long drive that for most of us is driven by want, right? Like most of us, like I talked about in the beginning, can get to the point where we say, I want this and I'm going to give my effort towards that, right? I want this relationship, or I want this relationship to go better, so I'm going to put effort into that. Or we're going to say, I want this job, or I want this career, and so we're going to put effort into that. Or I want these kids, or I want these kids to do better, so we're going to put effort into that. But what happens when you get to a point in your life where all the things that you ever wanted, you got, and you're still not that happy? Or if you're smart enough to look around at other people who got the things that you thought you wanted that would bring you happiness, and it didn't bring them happiness, and you're going, now what? That'll lead to some pretty severe depression. Right? This last year, my wife and I have been closely walking with someone we dearly love who's right there, who's at a point in their life where everything they thought they wanted, they got. And they're wondering, well, what's the point? I have nothing else to live for, right? And so it's counselor, after psychologist, after psychiatrist, right? After like electroconvulsive therapy, after rehab, and it's what's the point of living, right? I have talked to multiple people in our church who get to a point in life where you're like, I've literally achieved everything that I've ever wanted to do. And man, I just feel like I'm keeping myself busy for no reason. What's the point? What on earth can I live for? Solomon's going to speak to this idea, and 29 times he's going to use this phrase, under the sun, in this book. I'm going to go back to something that we read earlier. He says, vanity of vanities, a striving after wind, there was nothing to be gained under the sun. He's saying, hey, if you live for life here under the sun, and this is all that there is, the natural conclusion of all of it is you're right. Maybe it's not that good. Right? Maybe it really isn't. If this is all there is, if God doesn't exist, if there is nothing beyond the sun, then you really are a blip on the timeline of infinity. And there is no right and wrong, like I said earlier. Right? Because it's just perspective at that point. What's good to you is evil for someone else. What's good to the Westerner is evil to the Easterner. Right? And is there any meaning? Is there any purpose? Life under the sun. Solomon's going to say, if all that there is life under the sun, it is meaningless. But in the last two verses, Solomon's going to say at the very end of his life, I've realized that there's life beyond the sun. And if you live for everything for the here and now, it will be incredibly draining and it will seem meaningless and there will not be purpose. But he's going to say, if you realize that there's life beyond the sun, then all those things that you can seek after, that they can all be redeemed. Every one of them. Follow me in chapter 12, verse 13. He says this, the end of the matter, all has been heard. He's like, okay, I'm telling you what life was like chasing everything under the sun. It's all out there. He says, here's the final conclusion. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. And here's Solomon saying, hey, no, there is something beyond the sun. There's something to live for that's not just the here and now. There's something beyond all this that redeems all these things. Because all those things that we sought after, those can all be good, right? Like every single one of those, right? Love, understanding, living for the next generation, living with purpose, right? Living with progress, entertainment, pleasure, wealth accumulation, all these things, they can be redeemed and they can be good if you have an eternal perspective that says, you know what? God is in this and there may be times of ruin and hardship, but God can redeem it and work through all of it. But how can I believe Solomon? Right? It's just one man's words. Right, this is someone who lived 3,000 years ago, and you and I probably aren't going to have the resources that he has. I'm just throwing that out there. How can I believe him? And how can I believe him when he says, no, there really is something worth living for? How can I believe him? How can I believe him when he says, no, there really is life beyond the sun? Because I'll tell you what, I'm not going to believe just his words. But in the coming of Jesus, what do we get? We get life beyond the sun coming to life under the sun. Right? We get the incarnation of God himself saying, no, there's way more to life than what you just see right now. There's way more to life than the pain of a kid leaving, of a hard relationship, of death, of all these things that Solomon's going to say. Man, it seems meaningless. And Christ's going to come and he's going to go, no, there's life beyond the sun. And if there's life beyond the sun, then I'm going to see you. And what I see in you is that you are infinitely loved by God who's beyond this. And I want you to live for his kingdom now. And I'm going to invite you to live for his kingdom forever in the future. Because if there is a future that exists beyond my death, then what I do with my life matters. And what I do with my life isn't just, oh, well, I just need to be nice so I can get an eternity with him. He's like, no, I want you to bring kingdom now. I want you to bring life beyond the sun here and now so we can experience what life is like, experiencing hardship, but knowing that through hardship, I can have hope. That I can have hope that maybe my story will help someone else, that ultimately Jesus is going to say, you are seen, you are known, you are loved. There's life beyond the sun. Therefore, there is intrinsic meaning. And there's purpose and there's value and I see you and I love you. Man, we're going to spend some time thinking about that. We've tried to do this the last month during our services. We're going to have time to reflect. You got some note cards there. Take that. We have communion available here. Communion is for the believer. It's something where we take a little thing of juice and cracker and we remember Christ's death for us. But I'm going to spend just some time in prayer with us together as the band's coming up. Father God, I thank you that the Bible is so real. Meaning, I thank you that there are people who, like Job, have had everything taken from them, and they question your goodness, God, and in your mercy you meet us and say, no, I am good. And God, I thank you that on the other end of the spectrum, there are people like Solomon who you give everything to, right? And there's a lot of us like that in this world right now. The bank account's fine. The relationship's fine. The kids are fine. The cars are fine. The house is fine. The job is fine. And yet we're still longing for meaning. And Solomon's going to say, I've been there. I've tried it. And until you can get beyond the sun, until you can get to living for a bigger purpose than just yourself, it is all going to feel meaningless. Lord, I'm going to pray for the person in the room right now who's trying to figure out, is there life beyond the sun? I want to thank you that we can be honest and we can say, I'm trying to figure that out. And I'm just going to say, Jesus, like, would we all look to you? Okay, because if you didn't come, if you didn't die, if you didn't raise again, I'm not listening to some words of someone 3,000 years ago. It's not worth it. That's foolish. But if the words that were said 3,000 years ago are affirmed in you coming to life and you dying and you raising again and you seeing me saying, and you seeing me and say, Josh, I see you. And I'm inviting you to live for something bigger than you. And yeah, there may be a day where what you love the most is ripped away from you. But I'm living for something bigger. God, there may be a day where all the toil and the hardship and whatever it is that I'm trying for is just stripped out of my life. God, if there's life beyond the sun, there's opportunity for purpose in that. There's opportunity for redemption in that. There's opportunity for hope in that. If there's not, it's all for nothing. There's no purpose. It's all random. It doesn't matter. Maybe it would be better that I never lived. But Solomon's going to say, no, there's life beyond the sun. And so God, help us to see that today. Help us to hold on to the fact that you are God, and that because you're God and because you came to earth and you invite us to live in your kingdom now and your kingdom to come, God, that we would find hope beyond hope. We love you, Jesus. It's in your beautiful name we pray. Amen.